Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth, straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Hello, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, Two Straight Up.
And brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. A lot going on the Tina Peters front this week. And I had had a very interesting conversation with one of our favorite guests. She writes for the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle, has an article actually kind of addressing this coming out, a column coming out in the upcoming edition that Chuck is putting the final touches on. So Ash, first, let me say welcome to the show once again. Appreciate all of your insights.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So to kind of sum it up, so there's been a new thing pushed by a guy, by a lawyer by the name of Peter Tick, and we talked about it in our last show, and also sort of supported by a guy by the name of Patrick Byrne. And in my conversation with you, and I apologize and straighten up if you put it wrong, but basically you raised the possible theory that Tina Peters is being used by sort of fake MAGA people to maybe set up a trap for Trump. Is that kind of?
So I think that the I wouldn't use the term fake MAGA. I think that gets thrown around. I think that this specific effort to and it was first move her into federal witness custody. Right. You can name her a federal whistleblower for elections and move her into federal custody out of state prison. I think there's a whole bunch of problems with that we've talked about. And then now you can pardon her because the pronouns that are used. That's now it's the same people that are pushing this. Now, the net effect of this is asking President Trump to do something extrajudicially. It's asking him to operate outside of his constitutional authorities in violation of the understood precedent. And, you know, check me on this, but, you know, the precedent going back to the founding of our nation of what we understood these authorities to be. And so that, to me is, you know, we're asking now the Patrick Byrne, this comes, if you go back to 2020, in the wake of the 2020 election and the deep rig and that whole, White House meeting where they were like snuck into the White House and everything. They were doing the same thing. They were asking President Trump to operate outside of his constitutional authorities and seize machines and, you know, go into states and do things that he chose not to do. And none of these people have ever really claimed to be MAGA. At least Patrick Byrne hasn't ever claimed to be MAGA. He's never really been a fan of the president's.
Byrne came out as kind of a really kind of interesting, fun, eccentric guy. And he's managed to evolve into more or less a complete nutcase.
Really, I believe that sound from him.
Anything so he this says, just... and if he has some idea, you kind of go, oh, well, yeah, Patrick Byrne came up with that one. Great, or it's pushing it. I mean, he's just, who knows whether he belongs in some kind of halfway house for something but it's just, he's no longer a credible figure, but hopefully he still has a lot of his millions left from Overstock.com and whatever else. But I mean, Tina Peters, poor Tina is used as a kind of pawn by lots of people, most of all the Democratic Party, as an example of what happened to you if you dare question anything about the 2020 election.
Yeah.
But there are other people who have other reasons for wanting to use Peter for their own, Tina for their own purposes. And poor, she just, you know, rots in a jail at age 70 in Denver. But that's the life of the murder.
It does seem like her name, her story is being trafficked in a lot of ways.
And I'm going to, we'll play a soundbite here because I think, Ash, you raise a good point in that They put President Trump, and there's increasing pressure on him, and he's sort of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. If he kind of says, okay, even though there's no constitutional authority for it, except for, you know, Patrick Byrne and Peter Tichen's weird interpretation that I can just start pardoning people all over the country because the United States is a there, T-H-E-I-R, not a it, I-T, a change of pronouns. And then, so Bannon asked him, I mean, they're really putting the pressure on him. Bannon asked him, you know, do you think he can be out by Christmas? And they said, yeah. So, Doug, if we could please play the Peter Tichen interview.
And we'll put it all out. Just real quickly, what's the time frame of this? Do you think a pardon will actually be coming for Tina before the holidays, sir?
I'm hoping, yes. Yeah. I mean, you know, look, President Trump, you know, I don't know anybody who I respect more, whose intellect I respect more. He not only gives things consideration, but he considers the timing of things as well. I'm hoping that I get the pardon, you know, and before Christmas. Yes, we've given him the form that we think would be the most appropriate. Of course, his legal team may want to change it, but in any event, he's got it. As soon as we have it, we will be flying out to Colorado and hand-delivering it and basically requiring that she be released.
Ash, your take on that.
Well, what he's setting up is that if President Trump just does the right thing, we'll get her out. We might even get her out by Christmas. I'm hopeful we'll get her out by Christmas. That makes no sense to me. And it shifts the responsibility entirely to President Trump to get Tina Peters out. So if Tina Peters is still in prison at Christmas time, it's totally President Trump's fault, right? That's the net effects of this.
And that's a man. Let's just play this out. That's even just say that Trump is like, oh, that's a good idea. So he pardons Tina Peters, which under the law, he doesn't have the authority to do. So they fly out here with their little piece of, with their pardon. And I envision, you know, in Monty Python's when they had the guys throwing stuff over the castle wall when they came in, it's mm-hmm. like, here is your English pig or that kind of, I can see that. That's Phil Weiser. He's going to be sitting at the Department of Corrections and they're going to be saying, let us in, we have the pardon. And they're going to be throwing like pigs over the balcony at them saying, here is your pardon, take it and put it up your, you know what? I mean, it's just ridiculous. They're not going to go.
Well, I think the real question is whether Mr. Tichen is going to make it to Christmas himself. That's the only question I have. I mean,
well, geez. So Chuck, another legal question about this, because in that same interview, Julie, Steve Bannon asked him that. He said, so you show up and you have the pardon in hand and, you know, you hand it to them and they say, we don't recognize this because this is a state level crime. We're not going to honor this. What then? And Peter Tichen says, well, then I take it to court. And in my opinion, no, you don't, because the president then has to fight this in court because it's his pardon that he's defending and it'll be his lawyers. So even that assertion was faulty. It's a stunt. This is a stunt. And in my opinion, these kinds of stunts hurt Tina Peters. Because the people with the authority to get her out of prison, their benefit harm theory is that she's doing it to be a martyr and being internet famous. So these stunts that are not legally grounded, that are asking the president to operate outside of his authority and do things that, you know, we would, if Joe Biden was doing it, we would all condemn it, but it's okay now because it's our side weaponizing the government, right? That's where we're at. And the one other thing that I wanted to mention is the people calling for President Trump to engage in regime change in Venezuela right now are the same people.
Right. So it's, as you said, it's like release Tina Peters and if not, bomb Venezuela. Well, that's a bring in then. That's
send her to Venezuela.
Yeah, that's bringing
Tina Peters.
Yes, that's bringing this Patrick Byrne character now. And Ash, you've done a ton of deep dives into him, but I'm going to play his recent soundbite. But I think for me, the conservative treehouse summed it up perfectly. He says, everything around Patrick Byrne is sketchy. And as an outcome, anything around associates carries the same sketch. So he was CAA, now he wasn't CAA. This is what he had to say just yesterday, apparently saying before he lied, but now he's really, really not lying. If we could please play the Patrick Byrne soundbite.
All I could from doing this, all I could, I explored every other avenue I could, but we're facing an insurrection. We have this going on. I have no choice. First thing to tell you is You know how I've explained all these years? I've had this weird relationship with the government, and it was like intellectual, and my bright red line was the CIA, and I had nothing to do with them. That's all a lie. I'm CIA. I was CIA for years. After 9/11, I did have that academic relationship with the government for years. After 9/11, I got pulled up into the CIA. I worked for them. And here's the key point. In 2006, you can look this up in the Director of Operations, something called the National Resource Division. In 2006, they took me to lunch and said, "You've done such nice work for us in the NRD. We want to move you into this high-speed group." I said, "Fine." From 06 forward, I did other stuff. The woman who took me to lunch turns out to be John Brennan's number two. So I was working with John Brennan from 06 forward without knowing it. So
it's like, and so this is a guy that's pushing the chicken thing. And so it's usually, you got to wonder, number one, and normally I think people who are CIA don't like to say, "Oh, I was CIA." And secondly, he's like, "Well, I was lying then, but no, I'm really not lying." I mean, I go to what the Treehouse says. This, at the very least, you have to agree, this guy is sketchy.
Well, oh, sure. So in July of 2023, he wrote in the Capital Times magazine, "I am not a spy. I have never worked with the CIA, but it has been one of the honors of my life that from time to time, on rare occasion, there have been other parts of the government who knew they could call on me to make a small contribution, generally rather a rather academic contribution to some effort of theirs, often having to do with peace." So now he says, "I'm CIA." And to his credit, he didn't say former, right? But July of 2023, he said, "I have never worked with the CIA." He then goes on for 99 pages in that document explaining his statecraft and all of the things that he alleges to have done, including setting up Hillary Clinton to take a bribe, setting up Republican, introducing Maria Butina to a bunch of different Republicans that were coming up, in the 2016 election, so that whoever won their staffers and whatnot would be photographed with a Russian spy, you know, was the narrative. Right. So they're setting that up. So when he talks about having a front row seat to the Russiagate hoax, he was part of setting up, and he knew in advance, the way he tells it, he knew in advance that that this was happening. In this Emerald Robinson interview, he says, "I was fibbing in some of that." And he doesn't tell us what parts are true and what parts are false, but we're totally supposed to believe him now. And we're supposed to believe him as he is accusing members of the cabinet of sex crimes and of blocking the people's agenda with the president.
Right. Well, and it's ridiculous. It's, you know, this is a guy, go no further than, okay, so he worked for John Brennan. So like President Trump should like be listening to this guy for advice. It's kind of like, you know, when the Treehouse goes on, he talked about when the initial advice to President Trump on January 6th, Sidney Powell, he talked to all these people who all end up getting indicted and investigated, mm-hmm. except him. And so you got to wonder, not that something needs to be done about Tina Peters. I totally agree with that. But when you have these people proposing all of these ideas that may or may not work, I mean, I don't know that they're doing Tina Peters any good. And as you've said, they're also sort of setting it up to be all somehow Donald Trump's fault, not Jared Polis's fault.
Yeah. It's not just that they're not doing her any good. I think they're actively doing harm, because the people with the statutory authority to let her out is Jared Polis. Right. The justice system here is definitely not going to let her out if she won't admit wrongdoing. Right. Like that's their number one thing that they say about her, is that she's defiant and unrepentant. And, you know, she was never allowed to talk about why she did what she did. So that's a gap for a lot of the Colorado audience, I think, in terms of, you know, why she did what she did. But Julie, you'll love this. This is a quote from Patrick Byrne's January 6th committee testimony. "When I left, which was around January 7th or 8th, we're talking about 2021, I told Conan Hayes, I'll send a year's check, a check for a year's work, and just to stay doing what he does and stay available to be in support and just keep on diving in." In January of 2021, he paid Conan Hayes for a year. So
now, who's Conan Hayes? Spell that out for folks.
Conan Hayes is the person who was represented as Jerry Woods, which forms the substance of Tina's four felonies. Three misrepresentations are Conan Hayes is Jerry Woods. This is Jerry Wood, right? That's the assertion to three different government officials. That's three felonies. The conspiracy to do that is the fourth felony. The rest of the felonies she was acquitted on. So in January of 2021, Conan Hayes was paid for a year by Patrick Byrne. Was that a CIA operation to take the Mesa County images in that way? Because the downstream effect of taking the Mesa County images in that way is that we had the Senate Bill 22-153, the Colorado Election Security Act, taking statutory authorities out of the counties and putting them in the state of Colorado. We got the election denier narrative of how we're all super dangerous and have to be stopped no matter what. And it is how they justify locking Tina up, because they say it was, you know, such a major threat to democracy, et cetera, et cetera. Was that the CIA? I think that's a valid question to ask now that he's asserting this and he was paying the guy who was there.
Well, and where does Conan Hayes, where does he even come up, right? Who's this guy calling Conan? You know what I mean? It's like, how do all of these, it wasn't like he was like looking, oh, look, I just saw this new guy on X, Conan Hayes. I think I'm going to direct message him. It's like, no. And again, let's go back to, I mean, the CIA, you know, it's just, he was Brennan's CIA. So what's all of that anyway? And I guess, you know, and then you look in, we've had these Venezuelan ex-officials now talking about Smartmatic and things like that. And you just kind of wonder, I guess it's like, what the heck is going on? And like you said,
well, I tend to believe the Venezuelan officials, which are basically, they went down to Venezuela and convinced Hugo Chavez, whoever it was, that we can buy software, manipulate the votes. You know, it's great. Here's a few million. That'd be great to do. It's step two that you never get to, and Sidney Powell never got to, that this crooked software that's embedded somewhere in it was actually used in the 22 elections and subsequently. That's the kind of the great leap that doesn't exist anywhere or any proof of it. And if there is proof of it someday, that'd be fascinating.
Well, I think theoretically, okay, go ahead, Ash.
I mean, I think that we've seen the evidence of electronic manipulation in the Mace County images, but not just the Mace County images, in other jurisdictions, Williamson, Tennessee, I think, I think that's right. Fulton County, Georgia is a big one. What happened in Antrim was, and it's always, human error or code glitch or erroneous code. And they always have an explanation for these things. I don't think the explanations hold up. So to me, it's not a question of, you know, is machine fraud a problem? The vendors themselves admit that the vulnerabilities in their ecosystem are, you know, devastating. When they're not telling us it's the safest and most secure, you know, election in history and that everything is fine, they're saying, holy crap, 70%+ of our machines are vulnerable to spear phishing and other things. They're just not telling the public about that. So I push back on the no evidence thing, because I just think that's
well, it's not enough to make it. I mean, what you need is somebody who basically goes, I was in charge of that for Colorado and I adjusted them and it all worked out.
We need a confession. So the only way that we can prove this crime is if we have a confession of this crime. That's a problem if we're talking about democracy.
Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
I don't accept it.
Trump,
I would push
promising.
Back too. I think the problem is no one's been allowed to look into it, right? You get like Tina Peters and maybe the Department of Justice is doing this now, maybe not, but they're not allowed to look into it, right? To sort of trace back and see, like you said, they could trace back and see if there was manipulation. Where did it come from? Was it a glitch? Was it somebody specific? They would be able to do that. Now, a whistleblower would be great, but I think there is, you know, court legal cases can be built on circumstantial evidence and not just confessions.
Well,
but
what you need to have is what I think Bannon has said. You know, they did it the old-fashioned way, which they just stole votes hand ballots and ballot harvesting and dead voters and 10,000 other ways that the Democrats had perfected through the years. And Trump keeps on promising a full expose of that. And I wish, he'd appoint somebody to do that, because I think there is real evidence that they did it in Wisconsin, Michigan, Fulton County, and other places.
I don't think it's either or. Right. So fake voters, fake ballots, fake counts. We have problems in every domain of elections, even down to how we're drawing districts. So it's all fake, in my opinion. There is no reason that we should confer our trust and consent in this system that is a black box that we are obstructed from inquiry into. And when we do, when we do ask questions, we have our lives ruined.
Yeah,
that in my opinion is evidence. The level of obstruction is evidence. If we were talking about an SEC audit, it would be evidence. Obstruction and the shady dealing and shady conduct of the people that have the responsibility of the public trust, if they're acting in the way that our elections officials are acting, that's absolutely evidence. But for when it comes to elections, it's fine. Don't ask questions.
Well, and what is the remedy to that?
Well, I think first of all, it's not just Democrats. We have to admit that this ecosystem of elections, the Hava-born elections industry that favors big vendors and where big vendors have an outsized role in determining who is the people's choice, that is not a Democrat problem. In fact, the Venezuela election issues with the code and Smartmatic and Sequoia and the M&A landscape that led to these companies and this code being brought into U.S. elections, that was discussed by John Bonifaz of the National Voting Rights Institute in 2010. You can still find that up on NIST.gov. They all know. This is what's so maddening about it, is that they all know that our elections have real, real problems, that the technology behind them and the processes behind them have real, real problems, but they just keep kicking it back and forth from a political standpoint. You know, in 2019, we got Kill Chain. In 2021, we got rigged in 2000 Mules, right? We keep getting the different efforts of how the other party is responsible, but it's a uniparty and they're all benefiting from it. And when you actually do inquiry and you get the level of obstruction from both sides, Ken Buck, right? Gold standard, man. We know what we're doing. It's gold standard. It's all gold standard. When you get that level of obstruction from both sides, you're looking at a uniparty. That uniparty are the greatest beneficiaries of stolen elections.
Well, and the whole thing goes.
I didn't hear a remedy in that.
We have to tell the truth about it. We can't fix fake elections until we're honest about how fake they are.
Well, and to bring it back to Tina too, I think that's where on one hand she would be a witness if there is an investigation. But to some of the people, and here again, I think Ash, because I was thinking a lot about it, they are trying to sort of set it up to all be Donald Trump's fault because. Yeah. And he is the one person that really can't do very much about it, except, and even if he does, it'll go to courts forever. And, what does that do, right? And then you come up with a new legal theory. And I am suspicious about all these people, like you said. All of a sudden, it's like, I mean, who's paying Peter Tichen, I wonder? And who's paying, maybe Patrick Byrne is, I don't know. But it's like all of these people, Tina's just become this cause, hero kind of thing. And everybody just has this knee-jerk reaction. And I applaud you because you're one of the one person who says, hey, wait a minute, I have questions about a lot of things here for a lot of people. Yeah. And not just like, yay, everybody says free here because Trump can pardon her. And they don't go to step two. It's like, okay, but he can't. At least Colorado's going to argue he can't. And then it goes to court and then she's going to lose. And years from now, she's still going to be in jail or prison, really.
Yeah, I mean, so this decision that came down from the judge this week, Judge Varhulak, the federal court judge, he acknowledges that she raises good constitutional questions. Yeah. They're still in the state, though. They're not exhausted from a legal standpoint. They're still being looked at. And that's unfortunate, right? I mean, it is unfortunate that the state of Colorado will slow walk this. She is their most valuable scalp. She is the story. She's the only person in prison for 2020. Right. They are very invested in keeping her locked up. And I do think that they're afraid of what she'll say. I think that they're afraid of telling this story. She'll do the rounds. She'll, have a lot to say, not just about the elections, but about what's happened to her and the weaponization of government and how she's been treated and all of those things. They don't want those stories out. They certainly don't want them out before the elections. And no. So I think my gut is that the plan for them and Tina Peters is that Jared Polis is going to pardon her before he leaves office. And I think that because he loves to pretend to be libertarian when he's running for office. And I think he's going to run for president. And so,
he'll come in and he'll say, okay, she served whatever at that point, 4 or 5 years in prison. That's enough. She's learned her lesson. Yeah. Although she does run into it. Well, I guess he could pardon her. And I could see that happening. And then all the stuff may have died down by then.
And the libertarian angle, Julie, is that it's a nonviolent crime. Right. And so at that point that she's served a couple of years, right? Like 2 full years, she's done some time. We're talking about a lie, right? It was one lie to 3 peoples. And that, so he actually comes out looking like a middle of the road libertarian hero. And it's a good thing that he's going up against his party on this. Right. And that sets him up it's a national play. It's not going to play in Colorado, but when you're running for president, it's a national discussion.
Right. Well, I wouldn't mind that result. I mean,
If you're Tina, it doesn't do much good.
You know,
it doesn't do much good this week. But it is, as you said, the and that's why I think because
she was sentenced October 24th of last year.
October 3rd.
She's sentenced and began serving, and so Supreme Court is not exactly moving with alacrity. Well over a year ago.
Yeah,
well over a year.
No. I don't think her appeal was actually filed until February, though.
Really, they waited that long, huh?
They had to go through stuff.
Yeah, and they did. They were working on the bond, but they filed the notice and then a continuance. So yeah, it was. I remember talking to John Case like mid January, I think, and it still wasn't filed.
Now, John Case still working with this ticking? I mean, I'm just curious where this ticking.
Now this letter that he sent to President Trump, it's dated December 6th. We got it on Monday, right? We got to see it on Monday. That letter, he claims in that Bannon interview, was written by Stephanie Lampert. And Stephanie Lampert is an attorney out of Michigan. She's had, lawfare stuff involving herself as well. But very notably, she's one of Patrick Byrne's attorneys.
Okay. And go back.
Surprise.
Everything around Patrick Byrne is sketchy. And as an outcome, anything around his associates carry the same sketch. Hey, Ash, thank you for coming on and talking about this. And thank you for once again being brave enough to sort of raise questions and say, wait, I have a question here. And everyone says, no, Ash, shut up. And you're like, no, really, I do. I have a question. So
I actually want to help Tina. I want to get Tina out of prison.
There you go.
I appreciate it.
There you go.
Free Tina.
Thanks for coming on again.
Appreciate your time as always. Thank you. So we'll see. I think there is something to be said for why did this guy say he could get him out by Christmas? That's just not going to happen. Hey, and then Jacob, you are segueing into the other thing I want to talk about. The Colorado Democrats have a bigger problem. Democrat State Senator Julie Gonzalez launched a primary bid Monday to unseat John Hickenlooper next year, calling herself an insurgent progressive. I like that. I'm going to be an insurgent progressive. In a race that will fuel the increasingly fire debate in Colorado about how liberal the party should be, the far left will split the middle with the Democrat Party, could lead to a new Republican senator. I don't think so. I don't even think there's really a Republican, or at least
there won't even be one.
But here's what's, Jacob, but I want to talk about that. What's interesting is, and I'm sure the reason this is the same thing I do, big front page story of the Denver Post. When was the last time the Denver Post ever carried a story being critical in any way, shape, or form of Democrats, right? But this was...
Because they're bored. The Republicans are not really a party. Whoever the Republicans will put up will have no chance. And therefore, it's hard to get anybody to read that crap. So you got to go to something at least is possible and plausible. And
what was fun about this was how dirty the Hickenlooper people are playing, right? So the gist of the Denver Post story was, now not the Hickenlooper himself, and I don't think his campaign head or anything like that, but some prominent Colorado Republicans and people who control Colorado Democrats and people who control Democrat campaign donations in Colorado took her to lunch, according to her in the Denver Post story, and said, basically, you need to drop out now. You need to not launch this primary bid, or you will never run for office again. And flat out said, why would you want to destroy your political career over a race that you can't win? And she said, well, I think it's the right thing to do. And they're like, forget that. You cannot win. You're going to split the party. I mean, the pressure put on her has been, and I think continues to be, enormous to drop out of this race. And clearly they must have polls or something, Chuck, that indicate that Hickenlooper, excuse me, is vulnerable to a Republican.
The reason why Democrats never have primaries or seldom have primaries is this happens all the time. This crew, another crew, every other crew goes to whoever's thinking of doing a challenge and says, forget it, you got no chance, and run for county commissioner or something. But they do it all the time. It's just the Post decided, hey, it's what else we got to print up.
Maybe you're right, but this seemed particularly heavy-handed, given that she was.
Oh, they're always heavy-handed.
But I think, though, that more indicative of that is the split. I mean, the reason she's going in spite of that, and I'm clearly she took it to the Post, right, to make Hickenlooper look bad, which I think it does, is I think it goes back to something, Chuck, you've always said. Whenever one party is in power and can completely controls everything, what happens is they start fighting amongst themselves. And so the Republican Party is you know, non-existent as far as the Senate race is going, but the Democrats are now fighting amongst themselves. You've got Phil Weiser and Michael Bennett. Now you've got, you know, for governor, you've got, which he's a progressive, you've got Julie Gonzalez, John Hickenlooper for the Senate seat. I mean, I think it is exactly what you had predicted would happen. The Democrats are dividing themselves too.
And that'll exacerbate it. I mean, if they actually have and either Wisner wins or comes close and she runs and gets lots of votes, well, that'll make that split more or less permanent. And it'll get more fractious the more Republicans, you know, disappear into the woodwork. So you got to decide whether you want to be a moderate Democrat or a progressive. What was she called herself? Progressive.
An insurgent progressive.
Yeah. Well, and you said you wanted.
I thought insurgents were bad. Weren't insurgents bad in January 6th? I thought insurgents were bad, but it's not. Now they're not, huh?
Not, well, it's who's insurgent. You know, it's kind of like who's terrorist. I mean, our terrorist, then you're a freedom fighter. They're terrorist. You're a terrorist. But yeah, the more, you know, that split will get bigger and bigger because they won't be able to say to each other that, you know, if you do this, you know, you're going to let a Republican win, and because everyone knows that's not possible. So they kind of go, why not have some fun and have a good old internecine battle? I mean, you know,
well, I think Mondami, the election of Mondami, before, I think they could always hammer, the progressives were always hammered on the head saying, you can't win, you can't win, you can't win. And I think the election of Mondami in New York certainly it would make somebody like Julie Gonzalez and Phil Weiser think we can so win, right?
Yeah. And probably get support from people who supported Mondami.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, which is all doomed for Colorado, of course. We're like doomed.
Well, yeah, we're doomed. I mean, yeah, does anybody question that we're doomed? I mean, I don't think so.
And so that's the problem, Jacob, is like by the time it gets to the general election where a Republican would be up for a vote, you've got, you know, the Democrat primary may be bloody and brutal, but one is going to come out the victor, and then they will indeed rally, you know, behind that. Now, you may not get some of the establishment Democrats to go vote, but then, Chuck, we go back to what you say, that, you know, the ballot harvesting and everything like that, and the Democrat will still win. Like I said, I don't even think, as far as I'm sure somebody has announced for Senate, but no main.
On the Republican side?
Republican side, I don't think.
I don't know. I mean, I could, you know, I haven't heard. We got 20 gubernatorial candidates, so maybe one of those will peel off for a losing senatorial campaign.
Yeah, and Jacob says, and there's Jasmine Crockett, yeah. And Ilhan Omar. And then he said, it depends on how much the Senate primary will cost. Oh, it's going to cost a lot. I mean, essentially, again, because the general, they're not going to spend much money. So I think you're going to have the equivalent, I think, of the Democrat Americans for Prosperity funding Hickenlooper and Bennett. And then you have all these progressive people are going to be funding Weiser and Julie Gonzalez. But they clearly, whoever they are, they have a ton of money too, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's no lack of money on the Democratic side. There's no lack of money. There's lots of money.
Do you think that's a prediction? I mean, Ted Tripp, I was saying, you know, no way would Weiser win. He's a nut job, right? Or not a nut job, but he's so progressive, blah, blah, blah. And Ted Tripp, Democrat strategist, said, no, not so fast. I mean, I think there are a lot of people, which is why all the heavy handedness stuff is going on, who, I mean, I don't know what their internal polling would show, but that could be worried about that. That it's just, you know, the insurgent progressive beats boring moderate Democrat.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, and as the economy struggles more, and it looks like Colorado economy may struggle a lot, you know, the more popular a progressive is going to be.
except for the running out of money to do anything with. That becomes a problem. The city of Denver has to fire employees. You know how they don't have any, nobody has any money. The state of Colorado doesn't have any money. So it's going to be harder and harder to, I guess they could just keep promising people things, right?
Yeah, just keep on borrowing, have a new bond, put a new Denver bond issue out.
Well, and here's the thing that solves their issue, too. And I go back to what we've harped about a lot before here is we are all headed for jungle primaries, right? If yeah. not 2026, I predict by 2028, yes. both parties and mouthpieces for both parties are talking about, oh, everything's become too extreme. It's too extreme on the Democrat side. It's too extreme on the Republican side. So we need to just get rid of primaries and then we'll only have moderate candidates run and everyone will be happy. Only moderate candidates won't really be moderate. They'll just be puppets of whoever the big money donors are. And the big money donors, I mean, to get Carl Honecker on again, what they do is this is what I believe, they all kind of get together and they pick a few people that they could work with. And so they don't really actually care who we vote for.
Yeah, it's 1A, 1B.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if it's political puppet A or political puppet B, they can work with either one. And so we'll be given the illusion that we have a choice, but we won't. And in Colorado, there won't be any Republicans. So there'd be no point in even, you know, I mean, announce, I guess you could announce and run, but I think that's where we're going. So all of this becomes somewhat moot, I think, along with what is it the Supreme Court is deciding on, you know, should there be limits to how much somebody can donate to a political party? I think that's another thing that you know, they'll argue, see, that goes away too. If you don't have political parties, then all of the party politics goes away and we're just one big happy family controlled by big money.
You know, the idea of limit the amount you can give to a party, which they did, you know, in Colorado on some referendum. I mean, all that did was make it less likely that a Republican could do anything because the Democrats have all the kinds of organizations.
Right. Got NGOs that we pay for, our tax-funded, tax-dollar-funded NGOs.
Firefighters, police unions. The Republicans only had their party, and so they go, okay, we'll screw and do away with that. And you know, the idea of campaign finance has become a joke, right? I mean, people are contributing billions to independent expenditure committees, and we somehow think that's somehow preferable.
Clean. That's cleaner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Our elections are no longer influenced by money. Thank God McCain-Feingold bill got through whenever it got through in 96 or whatever it was. That really cleaned up, took money out of politics.
Well, then one other thing I wanted to talk about, too, was, you know, we've been talking about the January 6th pipe bomber. And I was saying the last show that I had questions about it. And Julie Kelly, much more articulately than I did, kind of outlined these questions.
Julie Kelly, because I also read the article, just said, here are some of the questions I have. And I agree with that. I mean, you could she highlighted some good ones. But, you know, there are a lot more that you could highlight that'd be well worth any list.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think one of the first ones she highlighted was she kind of went through this guy's kind of history a little bit and said he's sort of like the perfect poster child for somebody being recruited to be an FBI asset. Think back to what they did in Michigan, where the FBI kind of infiltrated some of these internet groups, right? And then sort of set them up to go do something.
Or set up the immigrant groups. And right. Then got the rest to come in.
Right. And so I think she's suggesting that. And so she said the first thing we need to know is, was this guy an FBI or somebody asset, right? Which it seems, which would explain why the Biden administration dropped it so fast, right? Because he was an asset. The second question is, why did he run around buying stuff for more than a year, right? Without building anything or just kind of randomly buying stuff? And she asked, was that at the direction of an FBI handler? In other words, was he also like entrapping himself, basically? Right. With this guy's said, call them up, say, oh, go to Home Depot and get this. The other question she had is because apparently they have him. He's on his cell phone the night of January 5th, the day before. And she said, who was he communicating with on January 5th? And then, you know, again, why did the Biden FBI drop it? Well, I think that gets answered if he was indeed in some way, shape or form as some kind of FBI asset. And maybe it wasn't just him. I think they had a lot of assets in there. And these are some of the questions I had. So who were the cops who were stationed around the DNC that night? How come none of them saw anything? How come multiple cops, bomb sniffing dogs, nobody noticed this pipe bomb sitting under a bench, pretty much in plain sight? How come nobody noticed that? And then my further question is, and then when they did notice it, why were they so nonchalant about it, right? It's like there are so many questions, but I think one of the biggest questions I have is, I get why the Democrats would sweep it under the rug, right? And I think it goes back to, he probably was an asset, or at the very least, if he wasn't an asset, he certainly didn't fit their narrative. He wasn't an insurgent progressive or insurgent conservative. What I don't get is why the current administration, the Trump administration and the Trump FBI and DOJ are not addressing these questions.
Yeah, well, they're always saying, you know, we want to get a conviction. We'll go, we don't care if you get a conviction. I mean, this poor guy who's a bromie, which is apparently, you know, an adult who likes My Little Pony, which is set up for little girls and stuff, or cartoons, which doesn't sound like a guy who's going to be making bombs. I mean, you know, it just really doesn't. And you know,
yeah, you could see if he was like a Call of Duty guy or something like that, right? My Little Pony is not particularly violent.
Yeah. And if you had a bomb that had a real explosive effect, why would you leave it out so it could be seen? I mean, why wouldn't you just put it under the leaves or something? And the whole thing, we'll never know what the truth is. I mean, we never will. We never, they got that FBI guy who was the head of the FBI in Detroit, who, you know, ginned up the whole Gretchen Whitmer thing. They brought him in, and he was in charge of the investigation for the first year. And when Congress questioned him, he said, you know, what about this phone record? He said, we got corrupted data from one of the three providers, I guess, three different towers, three different providers. He said, I can't remember which one. And so they checked it, and, you know, everyone said, no, that wasn't us. Maybe it must have been the other guys. And they're like, no. So there was no corrupted one. So this lead FBI agent who is now with
Let me stop here. We've got, and I didn't see this, Doug, earlier, so I apologize. So you've got two callers online. So let's go ahead and take the first caller.
All right.
And who it is.
Hello?
Hello, hey there. Is this Sherry?
Yeah. Am I on?
You're on, Sherry. Yeah, sorry. I didn't have your name here. That's my operator error. But hey, thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
So I just wanted to address Chuck's question of what's the remedy. A suggestion. Maybe if President Trump were to declare a national emergency because of the voter fraud, definitely with foreign interference, we're finding from Venezuela, that he could then require in-person paper ballots counted at the precinct, and you would have to get rid of all the old voter rolls and just re-register, start new voter rolls right then. And that should also give President Trump the ability to deal with Tina Peters and get her out of prison, because I think there's something about with national emergencies, the presidents have some kind of over thing on the
dictatorial powers.
And one hand, Sherry, that's not a bad suggestion, and I think it's something we should do without the president declaring an emergency. But then you're kind of playing, just to play devil's advocate here, now you're playing into the hands of all the people who say, well, Trump is a dictator. We told you he was a dictator, right, if he does that.
Yeah, well.
It's worth it, you're saying?
Only remedy I can think of.
No. That's good. Hey, thank you for calling in. Appreciate it.
Appreciate your thoughts.
All right, now we got Jacob on there. Jacob, you can go ahead, too.
Hi. Listen, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Hello? You can hear me? Okay.
Hello, we can hear you.
I just sent you the article about Bessent, and that he just wrote a letter to Colorado because we're not going to be able to take, we're going to have to pay tax on tips in Colorado.
Well,
so I don't know how popular the governor's going to be.
Okay, so he sent a letter. Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, yeah, it's Colorado, which we love. We love the people, right? And Trump says, okay, well, let's not tax waitresses anymore, servers. And they're like, nope, we're going to. It's like, well, that's because we're so broke. Yeah. To Chuck's point, Colorado has no money because they've driven the economy, the Democrats had in the dirt. So we got to balance it on the back of waitresses. So can he do anything about that, though, Jacob?
I'm sorry?
Can Bessent do anything about that?
Nope. It's up. First of all, it's nothing that governor can do because there's a change in tax policy which has to go through Tabor. So he's stuck between a rock and a hard place. But at the same time, you know, you're talking about all these voters that are ready to vote for Hickenlooper or the other lady, the insurgent, and meanwhile they can't keep their money from their tips. You know, they have to give it back to the state. I don't think they're going to be too happy about that.
No. Well, and the thing is, you know, of course, it needs to be talked about. Yeah, I mean, if you're a progressive insurgent, at the very least, you'd think you should go along with the Republican proposal to not tax tips or overtime. So, hey, thank you for pointing that out. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And I think the Fed also kind of along the economic line, I think the Fed cut the rate again, didn't they, Chuck, just a little bit?
Yeah, about a quarter of a basis point. So that's the third time they've cut it. So, and that's all to kind of, I guess, help the economy. So, you know, that's 3/4 of a point in a relatively short period of time. So that should lower the cost of housing and lots of other things, but you never know.
Oh, well, and here
one of the votes against it was a Trump nominee who said that, you know, it should be a half a basis point, not just a quarter. So,
and Jacob says evil Powell. Powell's doing is, I'm surprised he did this, but what kind of pressure they're bearing on him. They're beating him on the head to see. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's interesting. We'll see, just to kind of wrap it up. I think we'll stay on top of the Tina Peters case, because I think it is a complete, obviously, miscarriage of justice that she's serving the sentence. I think Ash may be onto something. I wouldn't be shocked if when he leaves, if Polis doesn't do something like that. But I mean, that's years away yet. So
sorry, Tina. And also, you know, she can't exactly count on it.
No, exactly. And I also think, 2026. I also think that I agree with Ash in that this, you know, to go on a show like Bannon's show and say, oh, well, Trump should be able to pardon her before Christmas. I mean, it's not, you know, again, Trump has a lot of things to consider if he does that.
Yeah, but I mean, he's just some old guy who got paid by Patrick Byrne to say what he wanted him to have say. I mean, I feel sorry for the old guy. You know, they just kind of brought him out of retirement and propped him up.
To be honest, part of me wonders how much Tina Peters is aware of any of this. You know, sometimes I think she's being used by both sides.
Used and abused for everybody's better purposes.
Yep, exactly. Anything else you wanted to talk about? You wanted to add? We only got a couple minutes.
Well, you know, one time we're going to have to talk about it's one of those things that has enormous workplace and real change of life in companies is this desperate, disparate impact one where can you sue for discrimination if you have something that is not intended to be discriminatory but affects some group? So if you say, okay, you should be able to lift a 10-pound weight if you're going to be a firefighter, say, well, you know, that excludes midgets under 100 pounds or something. Then you have a lawsuit, and there's the federal government is not going to bring any of those. That doesn't stop state ones, but you'd be amazed how much that controls every hiring decision.
Hiring and discrimination. Okay, that's a good. And the court is weighing on this. All right. Well, in the meantime, then we'll get to work on that. That'll wrap it up for us today. Thank you to Ash, everybody on Zoom, and our callers. And we will see everybody.
Go out and do some Christmas shopping.
That's right. We'll see everybody on Monday. Bye, everyone.
Bye, bye.